The world is evolving at a faster pace than ever before, and as we begin the path to recovery after worldwide disruption, this podcast explores how design industries can adapt to changing expectations and create a better future for both their businesses and consumers. I'm Carla Bazzacchi, CEO and President of WGSN, and your host this week. You're listening to Create Tomorrow, the WGSN podcast. We at WGSN have been tracking the rise in plant-based diets and lifestyles for many years now. But over the past couple of years, it really feels like this desire for non-animal proteins has hit the mainstream, with supermarkets increasing their vegan offerings and fast food chains such as Burger King offering meat-free alternatives to their classic menu items. Over the past year, as the pandemic took hold globally, consumer awareness of their own health and well-being, and also the food that we are putting into our bodies, played a massive role in dealing with the global health crisis, and propelled the plant-based food industry even higher in market share. The growth rate in the US more than doubled in 2020, as sales surged 27% to $7 billion, according to the Plant-Based Food Association and the Good Food Institute. Joining me today to talk about the growing craving for all things plant-based is Lisa Dwight, the founder of Bright Life Foods, alongside WGSN's very own Cara Nielsen, who heads up our food and drink platform. So let's get started. So Lisa, let's come to you first. Now, I'm fascinated that your background is in corporate law, and yet you're now a pioneer in plant-based foods. Tell me about that amazing switch in your career.
Well, I've always had an interest in nutrition and healing with whole foods. I started taking a lot of nutrition courses while I was still practicing law, and I'd never subscribed to the Western medicine sort of model of pharmaceutical drugs to just suppress symptoms. So I decided that I wanted to venture into going into healing with whole foods by starting a corporate wellness company to offer wellness seminars. And after I left corporate law, I started giving these corporate wellness seminars at different law firms and places where I had worked with other colleagues of mine in the legal profession. And while I saw that light bulbs would go off in some of the participants' heads and they would kind of adopt the plant-based lifestyle for maybe a week or two, if it wasn't convenient for them, it didn't seem like something that they would adopt long term. So I felt like the quickest way to get people to eat healthier would be to just create the food. And so selfishly, I started with a Greek style yogurt because I love Chobani Greek style, thick, creamy, delicious yogurt. And I started with a soy based product. And a lot of my friends were like, you know what, this is really good. Maybe you should think about branching out and, you know, maybe start a company and sell this. And so that was my first product. The second product I tried was mozzarella, because that was another passion of mine that I thought, oh my God, if I have to give up mozzarella, I don't know if I can do this. And cheese is one of those, they always say that people, you know, adopt the plant-based lifestyle, the last thing to go is dairy, because dairy is so addictive, in particular cheese products. So just started out really slowly. I didn't really take it seriously. I was actually still practicing law until about 2017. I originally, you know, filed the papers of incorporation for the company in 2016. And I quit my job 2017. And then as we started to grow and I expanded the offerings, the product line, it just became something that I figured I needed to take a step back to understand how to scale the business.
I think the point there about convenience is so pertinent. I can remember, like many others, you know, watching the Netflix series and coming out of watching What the Health, and it was like, right, no, it's definitely the time. And I have family. My sister has been a devoted vegan for many, many years, and kind of, you know, yeah, Banging the drum for it. And she's quite miffed that it took the whole family some Netflix hits before we listened. But walking into, it was actually Pret a Manger, which was, you know, the sandwich store on every corner in London where our UK HQ is, and walking in there and thinking, but there is nothing in here that I can eat, and I have such a busy lifestyle, how am I going to be able to do this? And deciding actually at that stage it wasn't right for me.
And then actually it was more a kind of process of reducing some things. And we pretty much, my husband and I, given up, not given up dairy, but we'd sort of made the decision, we're not going to be maniacal about it, a la my sister, but we are going to reduce. And then it came to Christmas that year and we thought, well, we're going to have a cheese plate. And getting it and laying it all out there and taking the first mouthful of, I think it was Stilton, and Toby saying, but I can taste the cow, because we'd had so little of it. Suddenly when you reintroduced it, it tasted really weird. And what has made it so easy now is because there are lots of great alternatives. And I was swapping WhatsApp messages with a really good friend of mine, trading on what's the best vegan cheese that you've tried recently. And it's become, you know, you share these secrets now, but that convenience is so pertinent to allowing more and more people to experience this lifestyle. What's your most popular product in the range?
I would say the feta that we make out of tofu, because it's so versatile. People can use it in pastas and salads, but also the aged-based cheeses. So we do two aged-based cheeses that are a blue and a cheddar variety. Cheddar is wildly popular because that's very, you know, a conventional. It's a flavor that a lot of people recognize, and you can use in a lot of different recipes as well. And then, of course, the Greek style yogurt is that's probably my favorite. I just love thick, creamy, decadent, kind of that dairy mouthfeel. So that's what we tried to recreate with our coconut milk based Greek style yogurt.
Cara, just bringing you in now. I mean, we've been at WGSN reporting and forecasting this uptick in plant based and vegan lifestyles for many years now. But it feels from where I'm sitting that we've reached that kind of tipping balance. It's maybe less headline news that people are increasing the number of plant-based foods they're eating, but you're getting these big headlines, you know, celebrated chefs now moving to either all plant-based or offering plant-based foods. What do you think's been that shift? And you know, are we at mass now, or do you think there's more to come?
I agree, there definitely has been a shift. And certainly in the United States, it is not at mass. And I think Lita can confirm that. It's in mass conversation, though. And I think that's part of the start of how do trends tip? How do more and more people decide that this is something for them? And it's by seeing, by example, as we see big chefs and some of the restaurant chains start to add vegan items to the menu, which has happened, that starts being, you know, one of those little data points that people see and think, huh, well, now when I go to my favorite fast food restaurant or my favorite pizza restaurant, I can actually get, or I see that my daughter or son home from college who is a vegan can now get a vegan slice of pizza or a vegan grilled cheese sandwich. And I think that's how a lot of change happens is, you know, someone in a family, especially in the United States, if your family members, many of whom have been living together for the last year due to COVID, if someone has a special diet, the whole family really makes an effort often to adopt that. And that ends up to leading to discovery. And then from discovery, we then see people think, you know what, it's easy for us to skip meat or skip dairy a few days a week. And bit by bit, it starts spreading out. But recently, last month, we saw Daniel Hum at 11 Madison Park make a bold statement about a fine dining menu that's going to be completely vegan. We'll see how that trickles out. I've had conversations about it, but those are the things we need to see. And I think also the other real tipping point is climate change is so clear, and people's health obviously became really important because of COVID. So both looking at our health and our planet's health, there's no denying that, you know, things are deteriorating, and more we hear these messages about giving up our animal-based foods, and it just starts seeping in and having more great choices like Lita's products. And we actually just put on a report on our site today on waterless plant milk. So this is something we went and observed a trade show, a natural products trade show a couple weeks ago, and also around the world. Actually, it's not just in the US, but more brands are creating to this one more extent of reducing waste, of lightening shipping, of having smaller packages, of we don't need to put the water in your oat milk. We're going to give you that oat milk powder that you can then rehydrate at home as an additional step of being lighter on the planet.
So I always love being able to say that I'm ahead of the curve. So when I was backpacking when I was 18, which is just over 20 years ago, I had in my backpack, and I remember being in New Zealand in hostel, powdered soya milk. because I didn't eat dairy, and, you know, mixing that with water. So it's amazing, these innovations, and yet they've been around, but just in teeny tiny pockets and probably not making huge amounts of money. But as more and more people are waking up to this, we're, you know, bringing it to the forefront. Lita Cara just touched on it there, but, you know, the past year and a half and has been transformational in terrible ways and in some good ways. Have you seen an acceleration and a take up in your products and interest in this kind of as a consequence?
Well, we just spent the past year and a half reformulating the products to elevate the nutritional value of the products. But certainly the interest is still there with the legacy products. So we've been producing the legacy products, but also adding. I met a gentleman by the name of Leonard Lair, who's the CEO of Algae Sciences, and we've been incorporating blue-green spirulina and yellow chlorella and mushroom extract so that we could kind of up-level the nutritional value of some of these products. So because my passion has always been nutrition and healing, I felt like rather than creating the nutraceutical, it would be a way to introduce some really healthy ingredients without calling them, you know, something that wouldn't be as appealing to eat, and still maintaining that the taste, you know, the elevated taste of the product. So absolutely, the interest level has gone way up, and it's nice to see from not just the local vegan markets, which is where I started out, because I simultaneously started my business at the same time a friend of mine was opening up a vegan cheese market in Manhattan. And so I started out with her with my first line of products, and now it's across the board now. Park Slope Food Co-op, High Falls Food, a lot of the food co-ops that appeal to people who are just more health conscious and environmentally conscious, so they want to make better choices in terms of not just what they're putting into the body, but what that choice has, the impact it has on the planet.
I think it's really exciting that we've gone from, right, just an alternative to now, you know, a spectrum of alternatives, which mean everything has to be elevated because you get more competition. And it is interesting talking to people in the US, because I think maybe in the UK we are a little bit further along. Not that it means that there are millions more adopting this, but, you know, like many people, I've moved out of the city during the pandemic, and I'm out in the sticks here in a place called the New Forest. And my local pub, which is not a chain, very homely, they have vegan options on the menu. And actually, they've had them for a while. They've improved them slightly. I'm not saying that they it was like gastro cooking early on. But it's very unusual now, I would say, here in the UK, to go in somewhere and then not to be plant-based options, even in places which, you know, might proclaim, you know, excellent meat barbecues and things like that. They've still got vegan options. And it's now not just, you know, the boring, obvious one. You know, they're getting a lot more experimental. Are you seeing more international interest in what you're doing? Or is it very much, you know, US based at the moment? Can you see this being a brand that, you know, goes global?
Oh, for sure. That's interesting that you said that, because Leonard has connections with two of his colleagues are abroad, and they introduced me to a prospective buyer in Singapore who's interested in the product. So I sent them samples just recently, and we're going to be exploring perhaps setting up production, not this year, but maybe sometime early next year to satisfy that that, you know, that particular prospect. But for sure, I see this going globally.
You've talked there about, you know, the elevation now. Cara, I'm interested in the sort of food tech side of things, because innovation, advancements in technology are also allowing this sector to move faster. What should listeners be aware of in this space, and what's getting you excited?
Well, it is a really exciting space, and there is a lot of investment going into food tech. And in fact, obviously, some of the big meat and dairy companies are providing the money for this. And I predict if pretty soon we'll start hearing about protein companies, not meat companies or dairy companies. They're just going to be protein companies. But there's a lot of tech money. I live in the San Francisco Bay Area, and I just was sharing on a webinar last week that Climax Foods, which is a tech startup led by an astrophysicist who used to be the head of data science at Google, there's a mouthful for you, is leading the way in that company that they're looking at. And this is what some of the other companies, Hampton Creek, now known as Just, they're using big data to look at the what are the molecules in plants that can be either replicated or extracted and turned into foods that give us that same satisfaction and nutrition as the animal foods. And so they're very devoted to using what's in the plant kind of genetic makeup and molecular makeup to recreate foods. Whereas we also have the companies doing microbial fermentation and creating dairy proteins through a fermentation process like Perfect Day. There's a whole lot of them, but also the whole world of fungi and mycelium and all the thing that is coming out of that. And we now have a number of brands that are creating kind of meat alternatives that are made of layers of kind of fungi. So it's like, it's really, really cool. A woman I know just wrote a book about this that I got and I'm very eager to read. So there's a ton of attention. But it still even comes down to taste. You know, even though all this technology is there, there still needs to be some taste. You know, it has to taste good. Obviously, it has to be nutrient dense, which I know, Lita, you're working on. But I'm very curious, too, of will consumers embrace this food tech? And we've been talking about cellular agriculture and like how far along are consumers in accepting some of this? So that's what I'm curious about.
What's really fascinating is I recorded an episode of this podcast a couple of weeks ago, and it was about innovation and sustainability in the fashion space. And we were talking about mycelium, we were talking about fungi. And it's actually interesting that it's these same areas of produce that are also helping activate change in two very different industries, and yet industries that were bound by the same things, you know, leather goods and then the meat. And now we're talking about, you know, how mushrooms are going to change what we eat, but also what we wear. I think that's really fascinating. Lita, what are your predictions in this area? What do you think, or where are you getting excited, I guess? What's coming next?
Yeah, I think that, you know, people are trying all different kinds of substrates in terms of like using oats and using cauliflower and different types of plants to create cheese products. So they're getting even more innovative in terms of the ingredients that they're using, and also with a concentration on nutrition and also now sustainability, because, you know, oats are just, they're just more a sustainable product than some nuts. And so I think that the focus is going to be more towards sustainability in addition to, in addition to creating products that are healthier. I do think that there is going to be a curb towards also just kind of elevating health, which is what we're trying to do, and kind of catch that sort of trend and wave more of, as a personal passion of mine, but also because there's been a lot of negative press about some of the burger substitutes not being particularly healthy, and like, well, why would you substitute a Beyond Meat burger, or any burger for that matter, that is what they would term, you know, fake meat, instead of, you know, going to McDonald's if it's going to be just as bad for you from a health perspective. And so Len and I have been working on something called a biome burger that is going to be based, it does have soy in it, but it's mainly an oat base to create texture. And then we're also working with mushroom extracts, and he created an algal heme that rivals the Impossible burger, which is just kind of that sort of umami sort of meat flavor, but using algae instead of soy. So I think the trends are always going to be towards creating foods that taste better, but sustainability is going to be probably at the forefront of a lot of the movement now to create products that are more sustainable.
I think that's so important, and it's nice. Well, it's good that the consumer is driving a lot of that, but I think is that bigger picture piece, as we're becoming so much more aware of what's in our homes as well as what's in our bodies and the impact that we as individuals have on the planet. Although again, in you know, previous episodes of this podcast, we've talked quite a lot about there is a responsibility on business to make this easier for consumers, and ensuring that price points are acceptable as well, because if it's so much more expensive, then it's very, you know, difficult. You're cutting out huge swathes of the population who just won't be able to access some of these products. You're just talking about whether consumers will adopt these areas of food tech. Do you think people are slightly nervous in this area, or do you think that it's just they don't know about it at the moment?
Well, I think a lot of people do not know, actually. The cellular agriculture side and looking at our cultured meat, first of all, it's not even been through regulatory in the United States, so this isn't anything that's for sale. But it's rising and it's growing, and there's more and more companies in the United States, in Israel, in Singapore, in Asia, that are trying to tap into this kind of technology to create basically proteins. And I think some of it's really cool in the sense of, like, think of that chicken nugget or that fish stick. These don't resemble any, you know, they've already been highly processed. That meat in there is half fillers. It's not a piece of steak. Thinking of a piece of steak coming in a lab seems weird, but having, you know, your fish stick come from a lab seems a lot more acceptable. But transparency is really going to be key. It's a confusing process. It's unclear where some of the base materials are coming from, and that will definitely be an issue because cellular agriculture does start with cells in some respect. And so where are those cells coming from? And it won't be one or the other. I think we're going to see, just as we're seeing more plant-based cheeses and having an option for more plant-based cheeses, some of those regular cheeses will go away and we'll have more. And probably the regular cheeses, same with, you know, the meat that comes from a cow will become more expensive, more rare, more of a treat for the people who choose to have it. And we'll just have many more opportunities. But transparency is going to be key in helping consumers understand what all went in there. This kind of happened with the first, you know, meat burger 1.0. Everybody was like, well, where is that heme coming from in the Impossible Burgers? And, well, what about all this fat that we have? So already we've had to see improvements on those plant meats. So I think the cellular meats are going to have to come out of the gate with a very clear message and help consumers understand what's happening.
Lita, I'm going to change tack slightly as we're coming to the end of this. Mm-hmm. You talked about, and you've been interviewed on this before, you know, this is very much your passion. We have lots of people who listen to this podcast who are really, really passionate in these areas, especially around sustainability, but also about transforming the lives of those that they touch with the products that they create. What advice do you have for people pursuing something, you know, a switch from corporate law to plant-based cheeses is quite something. What would be your kind of tips for success in this area?
Well, that is I would have to say you have to start with a passion of really understanding the why of, you know, understanding why you would want to endeavor to create something brand new, because it is a challenging area, but and obviously you're going to be running into obstacles, which is true for any, you know, career change, but in particular not having really any background in the CPG space and launching this company, I had to pull out my big why of why am I doing this, because it is incredibly challenging. The learning curve was very steep, and the best advice that I could give somebody who's starting is to surround yourself with people who have the expertise, who are in the space, because I have developed some great relationships through the Plant-Based Food Association. They have a mentorship program. And some of my mentors include Seth Tibbett, who's the CEO of Tofurky, Doug Ratty, who's the CEO of Good Karma, the CEO of Natamu, Daniel Nicholson. Some really great people who can help you just kind of guide you and steer you in the right direction. Because there's just so many things to sort of be aware of when you enter the food space, and particularly fermented, refrigerated. You're dealing with a lot of different variables. So it's a challenging space. It's incredibly rewarding. And if anybody wants to reach out to me, I'm a wealth of knowledge now that I've been through it. but it's super satisfying.
Amazing. Right. So final question, which we've been asking quite a lot on this podcast since it launched, which is, and Cara's been asked this before, but I'm going to ask her again. Are there any new trends that you have adopted during this weird time that we're living in, as we are slightly unlocking in some countries, but certainly some of our listeners are in countries around the world where that is not the case? Any new food or drink trends that you've tested and tried? Cara, I'm going to come to you first. You taught me an amazing new cocktail menu last time I asked you this question.
I know. Well, this is really, okay, I'm a little embarrassed to say it on this topic, but I made the feta pasta that was on TikTok. So here would perhaps be, Lita, the test is, you know, can we make that feta pasta on TikTok with your feta? And I bet we probably can. And I'll just say, to give a little context, we just wrote a pasta trend curve report, and we looked at the peak in social media attention from the feta pasta, and it was almost as high as the I'm going to buy pasta for my pantry in March and April last year when the pandemic hit. It was such a huge viral trend. And after doing the report, I'm like, I have to make this pasta. And it was fantastic. And I don't usually make these viral TikTok food trends, even though I look at them all the time. But it was really great. And so I'm curious. Tell us, Lita, did you make the feta pasta with your plant-based feta?
I have not. I'm going to have to try that. I wasn't even aware of this TikTok trend, but I'm going to have to try that. I use it in pasta all the time. I need to get a little bit more adept at the Instagram and posting recipes, because I do see a lot of my consumers, the people that purchase the product, they post these amazing recipes on Instagram, and I'm like, I have to try that. So one of these days I will, but thank you for bringing that to my attention.
That's right. And you should definitely stick a recipe on your site or in your social media of, yes, you can use plant-based feta. You take a block of feta, a bunch of cherry tomatoes, some salt and pepper and olive oil, and you bake it in the oven, literally, and cook some pasta and then mush it all together with a little garlic and basil. That's it.
Okay, Lita, any new food or drink trends in the last 18 months?
The most interesting thing I've heard that has piqued my interest, although it's not available just yet, is creating proteins that mimic the texture of animal protein using fermentation, the fermentation process. So I'm kind of anxiously awaiting that, because I think one of the things that a lot of people who are avid cheese lovers don't get the benefit of having that sort of like gooey, creamy sort of mouthfeel of a mozzarella or something that sort of mimics really identically to cheese from plant-based cheese. It doesn't necessarily always translate. So I think once these proteins become available and we can start incorporate some of those into the plant-based foods to mimic the same texture and mouthfeel, then there's absolutely no reason to go back to dairy.
Thank you so much for your time, Lita. Cara, always a joy to chat to you both. It's been fantastic.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you so much to Lita and Cara. I'm feeling inspired to go out and try some great new plant-based recipes off the back of that chat, so thank you both. I'd also like to thank you for listening. And to listen to more insight on future trends, why not subscribe to the Fortnightly podcast, which is available on all major podcast platforms, and we always welcome reviews and ratings on iTunes. If you're interested in what we've been talking about today, then please head over to wgsn.com to find out how you can access all our insight and analysis. We're constantly publishing new content around how we can design a brighter, better future for our industry. And if you're already a subscriber to our food and drink platform, you can discover a host of reports covering these topics on our site. So thanks again to our guest Lita, and I'd also like to thank our podcast producers, Roland Bodenham and Bethan Ryder. And thank you again for listening.